This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about the history of the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is now 30 years old. If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. We just need your name, where you're calling from, and your quick question or comment, and we'll do our best to get it in front of the panel today and into the conversation. Again, that's 866-476-3881. And we would especially love to hear from you if the ADA has had a direct impact on your life. Joining me now are three guests. Christine Dahlberg is director of the Indiana Governor's Council for People with Disabilities. Christine, welcome.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Rick Edwards is ADA coordinator for the Indiana Department of Natural Resources. Rick, welcome to the show.
How are you all? Good to hear you.
And Amber O'Haver is executive director of the Indiana Statewide Independent Living Council. Welcome to you, Amber.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Christine, let's start with the basic question. What is the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act?
It's the most comprehensive civil rights law ever passed that protects the rights of and provides access to people with disabilities, and that includes people with all kinds of disabilities. Not a lot of people think the ADA mostly applies to people with physical disabilities, but it also provides access to people with cognitive limitations, people who are deaf, people who are blind, every type of disability is covered by the ADA. So I think that's something that a lot of people don't realize, some of those, the nuances involved with providing accessible access to people, which isn't always a ramp or an easy to open door, can be a lot of other things.
Well, and I opened the show by saying we'd love to hear from you if the ADA has directly impacted your life. And really, I mean, it's directly impacted all of our lives. What, I guess, are some of the most common examples we can see, things that happen because of the ADA?
Did you want me to answer that?
Yeah, sorry, Christine. Go right ahead.
Okay. Well, I think some of the things that are most easily seen are the ones that assist people with physical disabilities, like curb cuts, which, of course, help everybody that has a bicycle or a baby carriage or, you know, just about delivery people. Those kinds of accommodations not only help people with wheelchairs, but curb cuts help everybody to get around more easily. So I think that's probably one of the most common ones that everybody recognizes. And then automatic door openers, although they're not required by the ADA, there's certainly a lot more of them around now. And also materials that have been provided in large print or provided electronically or provided through a recording to make them accessible to people who don't read print.
Rick Edwards, can you tell us how you got involved with the ADA back when it was on the path to become law?
Sure. And I appreciate what Christine said. I also would like to bring up the idea that this is a civil rights law, that it's more of an education tool than a physical, you know, require you to do this, to put in a curb cut or to, you know, put a, you know, make things available in Braille or things like that. It's because we had that back in 1968 with the Architectural Barriers Act of 68, and then again in the Rehab Act of 73. But I got my start, if you will, in the realm of the Americans with Disabilities Act unwillingly. I was involved in an automobile accident when I was 15 back in 1970. And for those of you who are good at math, yes, I'm old. I broke my neck and wound up using a wheelchair as a result of that spinal cord injury, and had been going to, at the time, I'd been going to Culver Military Academy, and since My parents were not real wild about me going, you know, 3.5 hours away to a place that wasn't really set up for accessibility because, again, this is in 1970, 71, when before even the Rehabilitation Act, they, even though they were willing, it was not ideal. So I started school back in 1971. My high school finished at Spencer, Indiana, which is Owen Valley High School, which at the time was a brand new building and had no elevator to it. So I had to be carried up 10 steps, a landing and 10 steps, and then down again every day.
Every single day?
Yep.
Wow. I mean, how did... Was that humiliating to you? How'd that feel? I mean, I'm sure you got used to it after a while, but that's not ideal.
Well, it's absolutely not ideal. But at that point, the only other viable alternative was to go to a school in Bloomington that was accessible, but it was designed primarily for people with cognitive disabilities. And going from a premier school like Culver Military Academy to you know, not saying anything bad about that school, but it was not really designed for me. Plus, the whole impetus behind the Americans with Disabilities Act was predicated on the notion that people with disabilities need to be included in the, if you will, normal environment. I don't know if you're familiar with the term independent living, but it's a philosophy that was actually begun across the country back on the coattails of the civil rights movement and allowed for, you know, provided for people with disabilities to be a part of the society that they wanted to be in. Ed Roberts is the father, basically, of independent living movement back in California, where he was attending classes at Berkeley and at the end of the day had to go back to stay in a medical unit because of his polio. So he wanted to participate in college society and, you know, the parties and all that other stuff, wanted to be like everybody else. And so he basically began this notion of, you know, I don't know if you've heard the phrase, nothing about us without us. Mm-hmm. But it the mindset is we need to be included. People with disabilities need to be included in all aspects of society. And the ADA was designed, and the purpose of that was to try and break down those barriers, not only physical, but attitudinal barriers.
Amber O'Haver is also with us. She's executive director of the Indiana Statewide Independent Living Council. Amber, what is the Indiana Statewide Independent Living Council, would you say?
Yeah, so thank you. And thanks, Rick, for sort of giving a really nice description of independent living philosophy and the movement and how that ties in with the ADA. I appreciate that immensely. The more folks that know about independent living, the better, in my opinion. So the INSILC, or the Indiana Statewide Independent Living Council, is a nonprofit statewide disability advocacy organization and based off of and grounded in that independent living philosophy that Rick described. Our organization and all of our staff are, majority of us are people with disabilities. And so essentially the organization and the board of directors, it's directed, led, and operated by Hoosier Leaders with Disabilities. And like I said, it's driven by the philosophy of independent living, which emphasizes that we are the experts. We're the ones with the lived experience with disability, and we have crucial and valuable perspectives to contribute to society. And we should have the same opportunities and choices as everyone else without disabilities. So another thing to kind of add on to that is that, you know, INSILC believes that disability rights are human rights. And as such, INSILC, or the council, empowers its peers with disabilities to lead and control their own lives.
So for some perspective, I guess, to illustrate things a little bit, if the ADA didn't exist tomorrow, how would things change for the work that you do?
Oh, I wouldn't have a job. I'll just be blunt about it. I probably wouldn't own a home. I probably wouldn't be married. I probably wouldn't have a lot of access to things that I have in my life right now. And I potentially would not have been able to get access to the type of education I was able to have. And there's a high likelihood, because I also have a high-level quadriplegic-related injury, that I could be living the rest of my life, or have been living all of my life, essentially from the time I was injured up until now, in a nursing home facility. It is not where I want to be.
Clearly.
And if I can interject, and maybe it's my years of living with my wife, who's a little bit of a Pollyanna type, I'd like to believe that if the ADA did not exist tomorrow, that people would still be, you know, generally inclined to do the right thing and include people with disabilities in society and in the environment. I'm not, you know, goofy enough to say that everybody's going to buy into this. But the bottom line is either of our guests can tell us, the vast majority of society benefits from having people with disabilities participate in their businesses, in their organizations, because of the fact that people with disabilities don't generally travel alone. We travel with our families, with our friends, with, you know, associates. And so if you provide access for people with disabilities, you're providing access for everybody. It's, again, not us versus them. It's, I don't know if you've heard the phrase TAB, temporarily able-bodied, but everybody has this status of temporarily being able-bodied. At some point, we're all going to face some kind of disability, whether it's us individually or a friend or family member.
And we will certainly get into more on that idea, the idea that we are all temporarily able-bodied and could become disabled at any moment. And we will be back with our guests after a quick break. We're talking today about the history of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which marks 30 years this year. And if you have questions or comments for the show, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Matt Pelster. We're back in less than 2 minutes. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelster. Today we're talking about the history of the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is now 30 years old. And we would love your questions and comments on the topic. We are on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. We would love to hear you this hour, 866-476-3881. And we're joined again by three guests. Christine Dahlberg is Director of the Indiana Governor's Council for People with Disabilities. Rick Edwards is ADA Coordinator for the Indiana Department of Natural Resources. And Amber O'Haver is Executive Director of the Indiana Statewide Independent Living Council. Christine, I want to start things off with you in this segment just to kind of illustrate what things were like before the ADA for you and for others. I mean, the ADA came about because there were problems. There were things that it was designed to fix. What were things like for you then?
Well, people had a lot of problems. They had a lot of problems getting around. They had trouble getting access to jobs. They had trouble getting access to education. They had trouble just traveling in their neighborhoods and their communities. There were a lot of issues, and that's how it all started, really, was the National Council on Disability did a kind of a paper, a concept paper, gathering information from people all around the United States to find out what the issues were that needed to be addressed by the ADA. And so... You know, then they had public hearings all over the United States where the Congressman Major Owens and Justin Dart were the two primary ones that seemed to be always at those meetings, although others came and went as well, to collect information from people with disabilities and their families about the issues that they were facing. And that fed in then to the ADA and to the advocacy to get the ADA passed in the in the late 80s. So I was a young, not young, I was a youngish adult back then in my first year working for the council, and I still work here in a different capacity. But back then I was a new staff person, and so I spent a lot of my time in 88, 89, 90, and even past that when the regulations were going through, helping to organize and get people to come to testify before Major Owens, Congressman Owens, and Justin Dart and others about the issues that they were experiencing, the real issues in their lives, so that it, so that those stories could be used then, you know, to make it real, to make to make sure people understood what the issues were and how it really impacted actual people in all around the United States. So it was quite an exciting time, I have to say, and it's one of the highlights of my career is you know, when that was happening. And then after the ADA passed, even the regulations required a lot of advocacy work. So it was quite a struggle. People really got enthusiastic, and it was, you know, it was just a remarkable experience to see people with disabilities coming together and to advocate like that. And it was cross-disability, too. I mean, usually sometimes it's hard for folks who are have different types of disabilities to come together across disability and work together for a piece of legislation. And that really happened in a big way when the ADA passed. So.
Well, and let's talk about some of that struggle to get it passed. What were the obstacles that were in the way, Christine?
Well, I think people were afraid that it would cost a fortune, that businesses would be put out of business. There was a lot of arguing about whether people could or couldn't work, and would people be required to hire people, and, you know, what if they didn't do a good job? And then there were a lot of people who were afraid of people with different kinds of disabilities that might, you know, maybe be a danger, they felt, to the workplace. There were just a lot of different things that primarily I think it was businesses that were very leery of the ADA and what it might require of them, as well as in some cases government organizations that also, even though they already had to abide by some similar provisions in federal law. If they took federal money, they still, the ADA went a little bit further than that. And it was a variety of reasons, I'd say. I don't know, Rick, can you think of anything else that might be?
Yeah, Christine, there were, I appreciate what you said as far as the cross disability. I would also like to share that back in those days, there were people from a variety of political mindsets and societal mindsets as well, and today as well. There are people, you know, on the right, on the left. It really is a joint effort by a number of people, some even,
yeah,
you know, without disabilities that
yeah,
were
that's
advocating.
True. That's right, yeah.
So, but yeah, you're right. And as far as the businesses putting up resistance, I would say it was stronger than that. We had people fighting against it in I remember the restaurant business was very adamant against the ADA because, again, they felt like they were going to be shutting down operations, that they were going to require, you know, I don't know, gold-plated toilets or something that, you know, that was just not at all the reality. And again, when you look at the benefits that come from opening your business up to people with disabilities and their families and their friends, and, you know, we've alluded already to the business or to the benefits of curb ramps and helping you know, not only people with disabilities, but also first responders with the gurneys, with people pulling strollers, with people pulling, you know, thermoses, et cetera, et cetera.
We're talking about the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is in its 30th year now. And we have with us Christine Dahlberg, director of the Indiana Governor's Council with people for People with Disabilities. Rick Edwards, who we just heard, is ADA coordinator for the Indiana Department of Natural Resources. And Amber O'Haver is executive director of the Indiana Statewide Independent Living Council. Amber, do you have an example of a local project that you worked on that happened because of the ADA?
Actually, yes, I do. Thank you for asking. So this is actually something as a project that was a personal project I actually addressed here in my town in Avon, Indiana. And I was working with the local area dog park through Washington Township Park. And when I first moved here and bought a home here, and my husband and I had located and found the park with, we're taking our little Chihuahua or Chiweenie, we like to call him. His name's Nugget, by the way. He's adorable. take him out to the park. But the problem was my husband always had to come with me when I went, and we took Nugget because the dog park wasn't accessible. There was no way for me to get in by myself. It was just full of river rock, mud, typically most of the time, particularly if it rained a lot. All grass, and there was just no, there were the access was horrible. So I reached out, contacted them, and over the course of a year, worked with them and their contractor on an ongoing basis and helped figure out through their, you know, park budget how we could put in and lay in concrete pads and slabs and walkways of sidewalk in all the different dog runs that were in the park in Washington Township Dog Park, the Paul Park. And after it was all said and done and finished, it is beautiful. And not only is it beautiful, I think folks without disabilities who bring their dogs out actually might even appreciate it more than I do sometimes, because it helps. They're not trekking through mud. They're not having difficulty getting around and having to traipse around the river rock and tripping and falling or having any other issues either. So it's not only benefited myself and my family and Nugget, because he gets to go out a lot more when mama gets to take him, but it also has benefited all the other park goers that bring their dogs out too. So it's been a really great, it was a really great project. And in the end, it turned out very beautiful and it was a really nice partnership in working together with that parks department. And it was all, and the reason it was all able to happen, honestly, was because of the ADA.
Well, Amber, I'm glad you got all that done, but it sounds like a big process. So what if a regular citizen wants to report an issue with accessibility? Is there an easy way to do that?
Well, I always recommend they start with the actual entity or the business or organization who maybe they're experiencing that challenge or barrier with. And if they really don't feel like they're getting anywhere or making any traction or headway there, I would point them in the direction of a couple different ways. They can contact an area center for independent living for additional advocacy help and support. They can contact Indiana Disability Rights here in the state of Indiana. They can reach out to, if it's a park, like Rick at the Parks Department, he can direct them where they need to go at the state level. And then you can also file, you know, complaints at a federal level through like the Department of Justice. But again, I always go back to, I want to give the entities or organizations or whoever it is I'm experiencing the barrier or challenge with, the opportunity to understand what the challenge is and hope that they make the good decision, right, to make the changes on their own.
Amber, go ahead, Rick.
I say you should know that the ADA also requires entities, Title II and some different size, Title III entities, too, that's public accommodations, to have their own ADA coordinators. So there should be somebody on site who at least has some cursory understanding of the ADA and their requirements. And so it's, as Amber says, it's always best to talk to the entity itself to find out who owns the property or the situation that you're looking at, and then try and attack it from the grassroots level, the lowest level, instead of heading right to the heavy hammer, although I will say that there are some times when the hammer is necessary.
Rick, while I have you, I want to go back into some of the history again, and I want to touch on a name that we heard Christine mention earlier in the program. Who was Justin Dart?
Justin Dart was considered by most folks to be the father of the ADA. He was an individual that he was a character. He was from Texas and went around, as Christine said, with Representative Major Owens, and actually literally drove to every state, I think twice or three times, to talk to the public, to talk to people with various disabilities, to find out, you know, to gain support for the ADA and to get a feel for what actually was happening on the front lines, because he was appointed by several different presidents to serve on a number of committees, disability-related committees, and was one of those parties that was very much involved in not only the drafting, but the development of regulations. And again, because of his desire to reach out to the world, to all of the United States, and find out what was going on, he's considered to be the father of the ADA.
And he also was a wheelchair user. He had polio as a young man and used a wheelchair for the rest of his life after he, you know, recovered. So,
and Christine, we haven't gotten the full introduction on the Governor's Council for People with Disabilities. What is the Indiana Governor's Council, People with Disabilities?
There's a council like ours in every state in the union and every territory as well, and we are considered the DD Council. We're federally funded under the Developmental Disabilities Assistance and Bill of Rights Act, and we've been around since the 70s. And so although we've had quite a few changes over the years in our enabling legislation, our basic mission is to promote public policy that leads to the independence, productivity, and community integration of people with disabilities. So it fits right in with the goals of the ADA, and that's why we got so involved with the ADA during the passage of the ADA, as far as, you know, trying to take at least one of the lead responsibilities in Indiana to organize the public hearings and to gather the people with disabilities and work on the stories and all that kind of thing when Justin and Major Owens came through. And I think it was three times, Rick. I can't quite remember. I know it was at least twice, and I believe it was three times that they came. And you know, one of the cool things about Justin, too, was every time he came anywhere during the ADA work or afterwards, he always wanted to hear from, you know, real people with disabilities, and he always wanted a list of, you know, the key people that were going to be there and come, and he always, as part of his remarks, thanked people specifically by name for coming and for participating. So he really had a way of getting a crowd to feel like he really cared about them and he really wanted to hear them. And it was pretty remarkable.
Yeah, Rick, I understand you met Justin Dart. What was it like meeting him?
This is an embarrassing story for me, but the first time Justin came to Indiana, I was actually working for the Family and Social Services Administration, and Gene Merritt was the director of FSSA at the time. And we were hosting this event and knew that Justin was coming. And it was at Union Station. And I was sitting in the hall, you know, decked out in my suit and tie, trying to look official and, professional. And this guy comes down the hallway in this wheelchair that looked like it was straight from Goodwill, and wearing a cowboy hat and looking a little disheveled and stuff. And I thought to myself, Rick, you need to go find out who this is before Justin shows up so that we're not embarrassed. And I went up to him and I said, can I help you? And he said, I'm Justin Dart. And so obviously my mindset was changed. My attitude about, you know, judging books by its cover was certainly amended drastically then. And I get to know him, you know, as well as you can get to know somebody in a relatively short period of time. I took him to the Independent Living Center in Indianapolis in my van that had a lift and a wheelchair lift in it. And so we had a chance to talk a little bit about his mind and what was happening in Indiana. And, you know, we had, back in those days, we had people like Jim and Frieda Pauly, George Brown, other people that were laying the groundwork for the ADA in Indianapolis.
We'll pick up where we left off next. There's a lot more to talk about. We're live with a panel today talking about the history of the Americans with Disabilities Act. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on the history of the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is turning 30 years old. We're joined today by three guests. Christine Dahlberg is director of the Indiana Governor's Council for People with Disabilities. Rick Edwards is ADA coordinator for the Indiana Department of Natural Resources. And Amber O'Haver is executive director of the Indiana Statewide Independent Living Council. And as always, we would love your questions and comments for the conversation today. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Or you can leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. Again, 866-476-3881. And we're going to visit one of those voicemails right now from Helen in Indianapolis with a question for our panel. Let's listen.
Hi, this is Joy in Indianapolis. I would like to find out how the ADA has addressed bipolar disorder. I believe there has been some legislation since 2005 when someone I personally knew was discriminated against because of a bipolar episode on his work. And the lawsuit was, of course, failed because it wasn't recognized as a covered disability. Could someone please address that?
Sorry, Joy, I called you Helen. Would anyone from the panel like to address Joy's question about bipolar disorder, Rick?
I'd love to. Actually, she brings up a really interesting part of the ADA wherein there had to be some amending legislation presented because the Congress's definition of a person with a disability was being misconstrued by the courts and not clearly understood that when we're talking about people with disabilities, we're trying to include a plethora of people with a variety of disabilities. And regardless of their mitigating circumstances, which in the case that caused the change in the law was actually involved a couple of females that were pilots who wanted to become commercial airline pilots. And because they wore glasses, you know, without the glasses, they were considered legally blind. But with their corrective lenses, they were fine to fly. They'd been flying for a number of years. And the court ruled that under the old definition of a person with a disability, that these individuals, because of the mitigating measures of glasses, and in the case of someone with bipolar, any medications that made them no longer significantly disabled in areas of major life activities, because of that, they were considered not protected under the ADA. So the Congress in, I think, 2005, amended the law and the definition to be much more broad in terms of covering people with a variety of disabilities and disabling conditions.
Rick, I wanted to make sure we came back to this term temporarily able-bodied, which you said earlier was sometimes shortened to tab. Yeah. Do you think it's hard to get people to care about issues around disabilities in part because it makes them uncomfortable to think about the possibility that they might be in that position someday or very well will be?
Well, it's a deeply ingrained mindset. If you look at things like movies, you know, the good guy was always, you know, the white hat, the straight teeth, the muscular, you know, physique, all that sort of thing. No imperfections. The people who are the bad guys, you know, the Hunchback of Notre Dame or the witches with the, you know, mole on the nose and all that sort of thing, Captain Hook. People with disabilities were generally portrayed as the bad guys. And you aren't really accepted in society unless you look good. I don't know if you're familiar with ugly laws, but it wasn't until the 70s that the last ugly law was repealed. And these ugly laws prohibited people with disabilities from being seen in public. They could actually be fined, you know, somebody with a disability up until that point. And it's, like I said, it's a mindset that hopefully the ADA is changing to let people know that just because you have a disability and it becomes a group that you can join at any point in your life, unwillingly generally, you become, like I said, not us versus them, it's us. We're all, you know, considered at this point, you know, someone who probably will be affected personally or in their family members by a disability.
Amber, do you think people with disabilities have the resources they need right now to understand their rights and what to do if there is a problem?
I think there are a lot of really strong disabled advocates that exist in our state and across our country. Do I think we all have access to the type of resources and information and knowledge that we need to ensure our rights are upheld and to fight the fight we sometimes have to do for ourselves? No, not necessarily. But I do think we are much further along than where we were in terms of access to resources, information, and knowledge. I think what our organization does really well and what the Centers for Independent Living across our state do really well are, because we are people with disabilities running and directing these entities and organizations, we understand sort of the plight or barriers that our peers are faced with. And so because of that, we work really well with them and have very strong knowledge of access to where to get access to those resources and tools and that information and knowledge, and do a lot of work around providing training and support and learning opportunities for folks to develop that skill they need and really strengthen their knowledge and understanding of what their rights are. So we do a lot of work and focus on that, which is why our mission is to empower our peers with disabilities. So,
Christine, what was the Olmstead decision?
Okay, that was a very important decision that applied the ADA to situations where people are being segregated away from the rest of society, and for whatever reason, because of resources or any reason really, put somewhere where only people with disabilities are. You know, what happened was two women who had mental health disabilities as well as some cognitive limitations were put in a state institution in Georgia, and it was time for them. They were finished, or they needed to leave and go back home and you know, be part of the community again. And their doctor said, yep, they're ready. And the state said, nope, we don't have any space, so you're just going to have to stay in that institution. We don't have any programs available, or the programs are full, and you cannot move. And so that was brought before the Supreme Court, who decided that the ADA integration mandate means that it's a violation of the ADA to keep people in facilities or in situations where they're segregated from the general public unless it's absolutely necessary for some reason. And so that now has been applied to a lot of different situations, not just people in institutions and nursing homes, but also people who have been segregated in special education classrooms and a variety of other kinds of environments where people, where it's common and still common, unfortunately, for people to be put in a situation where they are, you know, people think they're being protected, but really they're being prevented from living a life in the community, doing things that they want to do. So I think that is probably my favorite Supreme Court decision related to the ADA. And a lot of state governments have had to really change their programs and services to make sure that they offer opportunities for people to have home and community-based services instead of having to be segregated in a facility or a nursing home.
We're marking 30 years of the Americans with Disabilities Act with Christine Dahlberg, director of the Indiana Governor's Council for People with Disabilities. Amber O'Haver is executive director of the Indiana Statewide Independent Living Council. And Rick Edwards is also with us. He's ADA coordinator for the Indiana Department of Natural Resources. Rick, some people worried that the Americans with Disabilities Act would lead to a big increase in lawsuits, that opportunistic people would capitalize on the law by suing businesses for not complying. Was that an actual problem?
Oh, absolutely. We had a number of, I would say, unscrupulous attorneys in California and Florida who were developing relationships with people with disabilities and having them either go buy a business that looked like it was not accessible and send a letter out to the business saying, you know, hey, you're not compliant with the ADA, give us $1,000 and we'll go away, that kind of thing. And that's why I'm really grateful that Amber said what she said as far as trying to attack the problems that exist by talking to the entity itself. Sometimes they're just simply not aware of the barrier that they put up. Sometimes they don't know how to fix it. And there are a lot of people who are, you know, some that are profiting substantially by, you know, providing their expertise. Amber didn't say it, but I know that she knows, and Christy obviously as well, knows about the Great Lakes ADA centers. The ADA centers that are across the state, across the country. If I can plug them real quick, they are a free entity, a public accessible entity that provides training, provides resource materials for not only people with disabilities, but businesses themselves in knowing how to comply with the ADA. And there's an 800 number that they can contact that they'll get a live body anywhere in the country. You call this 800 number, and you can get a hold of the Great Lakes. You can get a hold of the ADA centers. Like I said, lots of resources and materials there.
Amber, is there any enforcement for ADA standards?
I would have to say us. We essentially are the enforcers. So I kind of joke sort of seriously and lightly at the same time that there really isn't the ADA police out there running around, you know, making sure folks are complying and that the ADA is, you know, being enforced. I mean, the enforcers essentially are folks bringing barriers of access to the attention of different organizations and entities after they've run into difficulties or challenges at those locations. Or we have also a lot of folks who are doing a really good job, businesses and organizations across our country and state, who are also making sure that they make themselves knowledgeable and aware of what they need to do to ensure access. Because after all, people with disabilities in this country have millions and millions and millions of dollars in disposable income to spend in businesses. And why would they not want to create access to allow them to spend money in their businesses? So I think that enforcement, it's a tricky thing, but I think it's a mix of businesses and entities and organizations sort of making sure they're doing their due diligence and understanding, you know, what they need to do and what the losses they need to comply with in terms of standards of access. And then also, you know, us making sure that we then hold those entities accountable at the same time.
Well, it seems like we're getting by without enforcement, but do you think that there needs to be some kind of an official enforcement? And if so, what could that look like, I guess?
I would like that.
Sure.
It sometimes it takes, if you are trying to work with a business or an organization or an entity and make them aware of the problem, right, in terms of access, but they're just not budging, you know, and then you file a complaint or you go through an ADA coordinator somewhere or you let the DOJ know at the federal level, those things can take a lot of time. A lot of time, sometimes years, to get the situation addressed and fixed and corrected. But it'd be nice to not have to waste all that time and resource and money, in my opinion. I would just love to see if there's a problem, it gets addressed. Just like if someone's parked illegally, you know, hey, you don't have access legally. Let's address this, you know. And I don't know what it would look like outside of that. I have lots of ideas and thoughts around it, but I would just love to see the burden not placed on people with disabilities, because quite honestly, we are dealing with and experiencing enough challenges and stress in our daily lives the way it is. So to add the enforcement responsibility on top of us from time to time is I think unfair. So.
Rick Edwards, you're the ADA coordinator for the Indiana Department of Natural Resources. I want to kind of put the pandemic variable into this conversation a little bit. Has the pandemic caused any new problems for you as the ADA coordinator for the DNR?
A couple. We've got some folks that have decided that they don't want to wear masks. And so there's an organization that you can find it out there on the Feeble World Wide Web that has been printing up cards that say it's a violation of the ADA if you make me wear a mask. It actually has the Department of Justice's insignia on it. That's totally wrong and bogus. But there are things like that. And then, of course, the mindset of exposing an individual's disability because you're trying to identify those at risk, you cannot expose that disability because their civil rights are still protected. But you can, in the meantime, ask them to identify as a person at risk. You don't necessarily need to know what the issue is. And then Title I, the employment provisions of the ADA, then come into play, and you determine whether or not this individual can be accommodated because of their disability and the work that they need to do. So there are some unique things because of the pandemic that have reared its head and made things a little more entertaining for those of us in the disability community.
Well, that's our time for today. I do want to thank all of our guests for taking the time to mark 30 years of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Christine Dahlberg is director of the Indiana Governor's Council for People with Disabilities. Thank you so much, Christine, for your time today.
It was great. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Rick Edwards is ADA coordinator for the Indiana Department of Natural Resources. Thanks to you, Rick.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
And Amber O'Haver is executive director of the Indiana Statewide Independent Living Council. Thank you so much, Amber.
Thank you.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our technical director and composed our theme. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can get it wherever you get podcasts. In the meantime, we are on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. And I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.